Coming up next, Catherine Spears Broadside.
I don't know.
Civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz.
But
stay with us for the next 2 hours, more or less.
You hear
what's happening in Santa Cruz around the sleeping man. Protests.
And it troubles in despair.
And it starts
to bend till by the end of the nightmare.
The latest shenanigans.
But I'm gonna give
all
I got to give. And I hope to live. I don't know, but it's true. So many things that you feel, so they leave you feeling warm. It's the calm before the storm, for the habit grows, and before you know it,
that was Phil Oakes from an ancient album, Rehearsals for Retirement, back in the early 70s. Oakes was a wonderful, beautiful folk singer, very much into the human rights struggles of his day. You're listening to 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, homeless rights in Santa Cruz and around the country, the state and the world, actually. We haven't checked out the solar system, but who knows? There's probably some homeless people here, there, and everywhere else. Many folks are up in Oakland this morning attending a Free Radio Berkeley's hearing, and hope we'll get some kind of an update on that, maybe even in the midst of the hearing itself. Who knows if someone is interested enough to give a call down here. For the first half hour, however, I'm going to be rushing out to check out an incident of police conduct. Apparently the police are in front of the Cafe Bercolisi with two squad cars, all their lights on, or they were a few moments ago. I'm going to go out and check that out. While I do, I'm going to play for you a pre-recorded tape which gives you my analysis and some speeches from the Tuesday City Council meeting at Santa Cruz here, which discussed the issue of the homeless park voucher program, where the City Council for 2 weeks previously had funded a program that they then killed by not funding it any further. I will be back in the studio. You will be able to call in and talk. I am here. We may even have a longer show, depending on who does or doesn't come in at noon, when the next talk show host is scheduled to come in. And until then, we're going to be reviewing the City Council actions, and I'll be back probably in the studio within 10 or 15 minutes if, of course, I'm not arrested.
We're about to hear the 3:30 April 9th, 1996 session of the Santa Cruz City Council, at which that body buried and gave a funeral service for the vouchers, financial support for homeless people going to the state parks, the Barbara Riverwoman Sherry Conable plan, which it had given startup funding money for 2 weeks before. But due to the huge outcry in the newspapers and the large number of hostile letters, almost entirely from people outside of Santa Cruz County, plus the fact that only, 12 to 16 people had applied, depending on the figures you get, of the 60 spaces that were available. This was a program to pick up homeless people out at the Homeless Community Resource Center in the afternoon and take them to the parks for a $10 fee for the week, where they would stay there and then get a ride back through the Citizens Committee for the Homeless van in the morning if they wanted it. It was in its own way, it was a more humane alternative for those 60 people, because the state parks had 24-hour-a-day sanitary facilities, hot and cold running water 24 hours a day, a much more spacious and beautiful setting, and it was a much better environment, much healthier, much more natural, much more friendly. In spite of the hostility in the newspapers, and in spite of the statements by high-ranking park officials attacking the program, local park rangers and the locals, other locals in the parks, were actually quite supportive of the River Street refugees, who were the first group of campers that were sent to the parks by Mayor Michael Rotkin back in December, when Rotkin, Kennedy, Daryl Darling, and Paul Merceau colluded to close the only legal campground in Santa Cruz, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and indeed the only homeless campground in the country at that time, in order to pave the way for Citizens Committee for the Homeless, who owned the property, to do their million-dollar halfway house trailer project, which they are continuing to work on and continuing to locate trailers for at the Coral Street property right next to the Homeless Community Resource Center at Highway 1 and Highway 9, what is now a fenced-off area. So the City Council is discussing this program. Actually, they're all just wringing their hands and sort of washing their hands of the program. And it's interesting to hear how they invent various pretexts to run, not walk, in the other direction. The week 2 weeks before, I had spoken of how inadequate the program was and how the council was ducking the real issue of either A, providing a campground in the city, as they had promised for months and months they were going to be doing, as a substitute for the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which they helped facilitate the closing of. Not only did they lend their authority, I should say actually Kennedy and Rotkin were the two men who did this, but they were backed up by Byers and by Celia Scott, who was not only a council member, but she was a member of the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and effectively blocked any real protest or discussion of the campground issue, both in the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee when it was meeting and in the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless when it had its monthly public meeting, which was, by the way, for all you CCH followers, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, that's the fourth Thursday of every month at 4 o'clock out at Garfield Park Church. And it's supposedly a public meeting, though I, of course, have been barred from the meetings for raising my voice once too often. So the City Council meeting we're listening to is really quite interesting and gives you some insights into the way the homeless are played with, the way they're used as tools for grandstanding by the City Council. There's much agonizing that goes on. There's some attacking of activists, the actual people who produce these programs. Not Sherry and Barbara, they get all the credit. The other activists, the ones who are in front of City Hall now and are going into their, I believe it's their 43rd day of the sleep out. The way you can tell by the how long the sleep out is continuing, by the way, is you simply add 31 to the day of April that it is. And today, of course, is April 12th. Means it's the 43rd day, and tonight, Friday night, will be the 43rd night. The sleep out by a very determined group of people who are now not only facing harassment every night, seizure of their property, theft of their signs, the cold at night, the hostility of the city council and the mayor and the city employees, all the way down to the guy who clips the grass and waters the lawns, but who are facing misdemeanors. This is a misdemeanor tickets for sleeping twice within 48 hours. The misdemeanors are punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So that's a subject we're going to be discussing later in this show. It's a very significant one. They have never actually charged a misdemeanor sleeping ticket, but now they have. Mooncat and Nikki from San Francisco were the first two honorable victims of this law that I've ever heard of. And they will be going to court in the weeks ahead to fight for their liberty and yours around this issue. And we'll be talking more about this later. What we first hear is Mayor Michael Rutkin, who presides over the city council, and if you watch this on television, he's the guy in the center. He has the beard, he's always smiling and kind of bobbing about, and he loves to talk. He loves to give elaborate analyses of things. He also loves to make sure the public doesn't talk much. So, for instance, in this first discussion of the voucher program, he gives Barb Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, actually Barb Riverwoman is the spokesperson here, she's a local community activist who started out as a supporter of the campers of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and pursuing the politics of the possible, she devolved into secret meetings with city council members to establish this program, which, you know, is a real accomplishment, a small one, but a real one. But unfortunately, she abandoned along the way any close and open ties with other activists who were pushing for more militant objectives. Though her speech is a moving one, and she does continue to support ending the sleeping ban, she hasn't shown her face too much at the local vigil, though Sherry Connable did show up there last night briefly on her bicycle, about half the amount of time I did, which was very brief as well. And anyway, she and Sherry did a deal with the city council for this voucher program. And of course, one of the problems of the whole thing is the energy that they all put into that month after month, which could have been spent in pressing the city council to deal with the sleeping ban and mounting mass demonstrations and encouraging homeless people to support that kind of militant action, was instead wasted in this program, which will die within a week or two. And this is what happened before. In 1990, Sherry Connable did a similar thing. She formed the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, excluded other activists, as on this occasion she excluded me from press releases, and they sort of adopted the River Street refugees as their pet homeless people, and indeed, you know, were out there taking care of them and issuing press releases, and eventually, ironically, were repudiated by some of the River Street refugees, including a Rolling Thunder Michael Sheridan, as sort of trying to take them over and use them and not really represent them. But they did represent some of them, and they did include some of them in their private meetings with the mayor and getting this city-funded money for the campground, well, not the campground, for the camping in the city parks for two sites for 60 people. And they got 2 weeks. They got 2 weeks. They got the council to kick down for 2 weeks.
And we're back live again on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I stepped out of the studio briefly to check out the unusual police activity. Apparently there were four squad cars parked in front of the Pergolesi, according to the report of the three men that I spoke to. It was a sort of a tempest in a teapot, and a little later in the show I'll play you the interview that I had with them. Regarding what you're listening to on tape now, I'm talking about the Sherry Connable background for the voucher program, send the folks to the state parks, or 60 of them, and ignore the rest of the problem that was killed by city council on Tuesday. It may seem that I'm engaging in some kind of backbiting or ego fighting here, but really I think it's a question of looking at the whole strategic picture of what's going on around the homeless rights issue. What happened in 1990 was, for months and months, actually for several years before, activists have been working to generate pressure to end the sleeping ban. There had been a long, passionate, intense campaign, which kind of was culminated in the 4th of July rally of 1990, in which there were several hundred homeless people who came to town, and 500 anti-homeless demonstrators, some of them completely misled, simply came out because they were union members. They called themselves Take Back Our Town and wore red shirts. In any case, it was a high point of real pressure and intensity. Mitch Snyder was going to come, and he ended up committing suicide instead. He's a national activist who works with the Creative Community for Nonviolence. And into this maelstrom stepped Sherry Connable and a bunch of other liberals who decided they wanted to defuse everything. Now, I've been told that that's what liberals do, and don't be surprised if they do, and don't get mad at them, but I do get mad at them, and I get mad at individuals who pose as homeless activists, but actually take the pressure out of things and divide things up into smaller groups, and that's what Sherry seems to have been good at doing then, and perhaps we can even say is still good at doing, even though I have, as I said, great respect for her eloquence. And she, too, opposes the sleeping ban. It's just she has her own particular unique way of going about it, which involves an exclusive sort of approach to the whole thing. Why mention this? Why go into personalities here? Well, because if you see a pattern, a process happening again and again, when you see someone who comes from the establishment scene, who was previously campaign manager for Mo Reisch and for Catherine Byers, two city council candidates, SCAN-supported candidates who were successful, when you see the homeless movement broken up, then you begin to realize that there's a pattern at work, and you want to point it out before it happens again. I mean, or to make sure that the next time that these people involve themselves, that they're closely watched in what they do. I mean, I think everybody should be able to involve themselves, including discredited council members like Scott Kennedy. But you have to very closely examine what they're doing and make sure that they don't repeat the same closed process stuff that was going on before, the same divisive don't support the militants approach that results in sellout situations. So that's why I'm concerned about it and go on about it at length, because I don't think it's really understood by people who listen to the rhetoric of these people but don't look at their actions and the kinds of processes they follow. By the way, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and this is a call-in talk show. You can take issue with me. My phone number is 427 here at the Free Radio, 3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz at 427-3772. Lines are open. We're going to continue listening to this tape, pre-recorded tape, but we can interrupt it at any time and discuss any of the issues that rise from the tape or issues that you yourself want to bring up. So let's proceed.
Of space, but of course that ended once the hullabaloo started from the media, or that's it ended actually on this Tuesday, April 9th. Again, the sad thing is that homeless activists have not united here, and some will criticize me for being perhaps divisive in my way by pointing out Connable's independent agenda. Which excluded me and other activists, mostly me, let's be candid about it, but certainly other activists too who are associated with me. Connable supported my arrest at Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or that was the initial statement she made to Daryl Darling. She went out of her way to separate herself from me. So what we have was the homeless being divided into little groups instead of uniting into one large group, which is what we need to get any kind of significant political power in this town. And that's a sad thing, and because it's a process that I've seen happen with her before, I felt it important to point out the danger signs when she started removing my name from press releases and when she began not holding meetings of Save Our Shelter in January, February, and March, and yet making statements on behalf of the Lucy Refugees and that group when they started working on an elite group of homeless people instead of the massive homeless people. It didn't look good, and unfortunately it's ended up where it is now. But what we're examining in this is the process. Oh, and by the way, I invite Sherry Connable. I'm going to invite her to call in. In fact, I did invite her last night. She has never called in to my show in all the history of the twice-a-week show for the last year. And she's always had that opportunity, and she still will have that opportunity to answer any of these concerns that I raise and criticisms. And I hope she does, because she's a very eloquent spokesperson when she wants to be. Well, she's a very eloquent spokesperson, period. And she's, in fact, so eloquent that it repels me when I see her doing one thing with a public face and another with a private face, in terms of being very, very friendly in public. And then, you know, there's a backstabbing element to it, which I found, which is disagreeable. Perhaps I have a tendency to be overly diplomatic myself in circumstances where I've called out council members, but I'm reluctant to call out fellow activists. Though I mention these things because we're going to be going through this process again, and we need to know what to look forward to and to see what's going on, to make sure that we safeguard things to begin with and join together and not exclude each other. And Sherry and Barbara have never been excluded from my meetings and from what I do. They've chosen to exclude themselves, and they've chosen to exclude me and those who are near me. I find that unfortunate, all in the interest of courting the city council. Too bad. Well, here is the city council. Here's Mayor Mike Rotkin talking. He's, again, limiting debate. Rotkin gives Barbara Riverwoman 10 minutes, and gives the rest of us 1 minute each. It's interesting, 2 weeks ago, Rotkin walked by the sleep out, and I specifically asked him, because we needed to know whether we were going to even bother to come to the council meeting at which this voucher money for the parks program was to be discussed, how much time we would have. Are we going to have only 1 minute, or are we going to have ample time? I asked him, are we going to have ample time? He said, oh yes, there'll be ample time, ample time. He repeated. When we got into the council chambers, he gave us all 1 minute and threatened to arrest those whose speeches extended beyond 1 minute. Mike Rotkin lied. And indeed, there was a situation 2 weeks ago when, or broke his word, when Sherry Connable as well put off the debate for the evening, making sure that some of us did not speak because we wouldn't have the time and wouldn't be returning, and also supposedly to support the River Street refugees who were to be coming back and talking, and none of them did come back and none of them did talk. And it was too bad that she didn't consult with us again on that matter, because we might have actually been able to pressure Rotkin into giving us more time. And the key to this is not simply to attack Rotkin, although I think that's quite appropriate, but to turn to the other council members and ask them to provide us with more time, or to show that there is a division on the council on this issue, and that we're not a bunch of wild yahoos screaming in the wilderness, but we do have support from responsible council members. And that is the other significant thing that happened at the city council, which I was discussing on Robert Flory's show on Thursday, a very good show, comes on 10 o'clock on every Thursday morning, in which I pointed out Celia Scott did a number of good things at this meeting, and she can be appealed to. She will actually act on requests that you make, or attempt to. She doesn't get support of the council on most occasions, but on some she does. Here we have homeless issues. Now, the Mike Rotkin's voice is really kind of inaudible here, so what he does is he tells Barbara Riverwoman, she can have 10 minutes. Everybody else, I can have 1 minute. And if you're interested in this tape, by the way, and actually hearing what happened at the council meeting, and you weren't able to attend the meeting, you weren't able to watch it on television because the entire city council afternoon and evening sessions are televised, you can go to the library. The library and the city clerk both have audio tapes, and the library has tape recorders that you can listen to these discussions and debates on. And actually, you can actually go back and listen to the old oral communications periods, and that's very interesting, particularly around 1988, 89, 90, and you can hear the historical background of the debate in City Council. Again, not a debate on the agenda, but a debate off the agenda with the homeless excluded, but sort of cramming into the chambers anyway and trying to make their voices heard. At this City Council meeting at April 9th, the only homeless, there were a number of homeless people there from the vigil out front, like Dan Hopkins and John Hamilton. And there were also the homeless people that Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable had either brought with them or invited to the meeting, or who came because they had used Barbara and Sherry's program and were supportive of it. And there were three or four or five of those. And they spoke eloquently, and it was all very touching, and the media was there, sort of a nice finishing point for the program. You know, I mean, it made a nice little drama, but it was the end of the program, or is the end of the program in 2 weeks. Here's Barbara Riverwoman's opening statement. Rotkin not only gives Barbara Riverwoman 10 minutes, but he also allows her choices as to where she wants to be on the agenda. When it came to me, I was told I either had to speak as he was pulling the cards out, or I couldn't speak at all. In fact, of course, had I been quicker witted, and I encourage people to do this in the future, I would have appealed to another council member. I would have asked the council to allow me to wait a moment, because I'm not ready, and that I let other people go first, and not be rushed into giving my speech, because Rotkin had his own agenda, which essentially was to get through this as quickly as possible and to dump it, giving council members an opportunity to do their public posturing for the cameras, and then move on to the next business.
That's good. I can do it. Your decision to support a program that would place people without homes in the state park has struck a really raw nerve in our community and throughout this whole state. As you know, I've talked with outraged people on my personal phone. I've listened to KSCO. I've read all of the letters that have been directed to you and the city council. And I have read the newspapers, and I realize today that even more keenly than I ever have, how strongly feared and hated homeless people are, and how strong is the impulse to isolate and stigmatize homeless people. We are in danger in our country of creating a class of untouchables in our society, scapegoats for all that is not right. And few, if any, of the people who communicated with me and who communicated with the media looked beneath this feared behavior in order to see how child abuse, sexual abuse, school failure, and the effects of our military and penal institutions are the underlying causes of this situation. Nor do they challenge the economic system that underlies much of the homelessness. It's been discouraging, and I felt battered and sobered by what I've heard. And yet I don't believe that the public outcry is truly representative of where our community is, particularly our community in Santa Cruz. There are hundreds of people in our community and throughout this country who are working very quietly to improve the lives of homeless people and of disadvantaged people. And we have a city council sitting right here who has made a really serious effort to find a solution to that, and who's willing to really go out on a limb and take a very controversial position for which you've taken a battering. And I also want to point to the rangers in the state park. They have been compassionate, they've been fair, they've been flexible. And the chief ranger, Bob Culbertson, has been adamant from the very beginning and continues to be adamant that homeless people should be treated with absolute respect and with absolute equality. And that influence has clearly influenced his staff throughout the state parks, and we've felt that all winter. One retired ranger, the best phone call I received during this whole period, apart from the man who was worried about salt water intrusion into his wells if homeless people were bused to Sunset, was that from a retired ranger who had worked in this area for many, many years. And he called me on the phone to offer me his support and to assure me that the much ballyhooed numbers, 20% arrests, pretty much compared with the amount of arrests that are generally, citations and warnings that are generally issued to the general population during the summer. The rangers understand that homeless people have always used the state parks and will continue to use them, and that the stereotypes that many in our society have about homeless people is true. The people who have been worried have always been camping next to homeless people, and they will continue to camp next to homeless people, and they won't know it. I wish everybody could meet and talk, not only to the homeless, but to these rangers. I need to admit publicly that there is, among the more visible homeless, people who are drug addicts and drunks and criminals. But among the visible homeless population, we have also found many, many who suffer not from these afflictions, but from physical disabilities, from mental and emotional stress, from lack of family support, and from joblessness. It's far, far too complex, as you...
Interrupting this speech by Barb Riverwoman at last Tuesday's council meeting to comment. Barb Riverwoman sounds here like a typical service provider, one who is making these acknowledgments to her funding sources in order to placate the kinds of prejudices and stereotypes that are running rampant throughout the scene here. I mean, what we have is the question of shelter and a right to sleep. Questions of criminality, drug use, alcohol abuse or something aren't really relevant to these issues. They're only relevant if you're trying to placate the prejudices of the people who somehow believe the homeless should be disappeared completely. Individuals who engage in criminal behavior of any kind, whether they have a home or not, if the crime is against another person and is an abusive one, they should be obviously prosecuted. But to give credence to these kinds of stereotypes, to talk about them as though they had some reality to them, as Barb Riverwoman has done, for example, on this show, when she talked about there being major alcohol and drug and mental illness problems, having, you know, a significant, well, being the majority of the homeless people, that's a conservative, actually that's a reactionary position taken by some sort of right-wing authors recently to justify the whole torrent of anti-homeless laws that has been flooding the state and indeed the nation. You know, don't sit on the sidewalk, don't sleep at night, don't ask for a dime after dark. They're essentially part of the roll up the poor people and get them out of sight procedures that are going on. And I really don't have much sympathy with those arguments, and I don't think they have much validity, and I'm sorry to hear her using them, and I had to interrupt this speech to make that comment, and I'm no doubt we'll be interrupting again, but let's hear some more of Barb Riverwoman at City Council.
For a moment, to paint with one color. And among the less visible population of people in vans and the people doubled up in homes, this phenomenon is even less true. And as you know, our program was designed from the very outset to serve persons who are not substance abusers, who are not violent, who needed a legal place to sleep, and who had the mental and physical skills necessary for camping successfully in the parks. Our proposal was very modest. It was 2 campsites in each of 5 state parks, a total of 10 campsites out of 564. It was simply the extension of a volunteer program that we had run throughout the winter and that had been successful for those who created it and had created very little stress on the state park once we were through that bumpy beginning. It was the formalization of this program and the city funding that created the storm of protest. One of the amusing stories to come out of this drama was the attempt by a media group to find the homeless campsite, which ended with them descending on a group of sort of grubby-looking single men. The men turned out to be a group of businessmen from San Jose. I want to review really briefly what the strengths of this proposal were that led you to vote for this in the first place. The program provides a respectable place for homeless people to go, a place that doesn't ghettoize them but keeps them part of the mainstream society. For many people, especially the recently homeless, the shock of finding themselves in a community of long-term homeless people can seriously add to the difficulties they face. The program encourages self-sufficiency. They cook for themselves. They help pay for the program. They provide their own shelter. And this is in a system where many of the shelter programs that we have actually breed dependency. It provides a good deal of freedom and autonomy that, compared to other shelter programs, are more restrictive in terms of hours and other rules. It helps create community, overcoming the isolation that many homeless people face. And it provides a very healing physical environment. It's a cost-effective program. And last but not least, it provides the only legal place we could come up with to give people to sleep. And that's why we proposed it, and that's why you did it. Some of you have cited the lack of response to the program as a problem, the few numbers that have responded to the program, and you may use that as a cause to discontinue funding. We don't agree with this reasoning. No program fills to capacity in just a week. The group of people whom this program was intended to serve actually may not be the group of people for whom it is most appropriate. We were concerned at the beginning, the armory closing. Many of those who use the armory during the winter have learned to survive outside of shelters in the warm months and value the personal autonomy this entails, in spite of the risk of being arrested. Others may have been deterred by the political controversy surrounding the program. But for the most part, I actually think it was a mismatch between the design of the program and those to whom we did the outreach on Coral Street, as well as the short lead time. The people who have found their way to the program include those who are very recently homeless, families with children, single women, physically disabled persons, and some long-term homeless who may have alcohol problems, but who are able to keep it under control and want to avoid arrest. And people who have signed up for our programs are more likely than Armory residents to have vehicles that they have been using as homes. I think that if the program were given more time to develop, I think it would fill up very quickly, although not with the people, perhaps, for whom it was originally intended. What I want to say tonight is that I think we created a viable program, that it's a desirable program, that it's beginning to work, and that's the reason you voted for it. It served a very urgent community need, even though it was a stopgap measure. I think it was worth supporting 2 weeks ago, and I think it would be worth supporting today. Unfortunately, what is a desirable program may not be possible, and that is the real question before you today. It is the practical possibility and not the desirability which I expect will and should influence your choice this afternoon. The state parks have made it very clear that they intend to initiate legal action against the city if the city continues to fund this program, and that they intend to block the entry into the state parks and even arrest those people who are registered in the program. I believe that the way the state park registration system is set up is discriminatory against poor people and homeless people who don't have credit cards, and that a strong legal case could be made to prove it. And I also think it could be proved that housing options, the program we've proposed is clearly within the guidelines of the state park regulations, and that it's functioned well winter within these guidelines and has been perfectly acceptable, and that we are simply asking for the state park system to treat homeless people as it would any other people. But proving this could entail a long, drawn-out legal battle, and I personally shrink from the thought that our energy would be spent in this way, especially for a program that was conceived not as a long-term project, but...
You're listening to Barbara Riverwin at City Council, April 9th, 1996, as she helps to bury the voucher program. Actually, you might say that she states she wants it to continue, but you also hear her essentially justifying the activities of the City Council. A long, drawn-out legal battle. Well, that's what people fighting the sleeping ban are facing. And perhaps the city and those who support this program and the rights of people to use the state parks might be in a better position to engage in this kind of legal battle with the resources of the city attorney's office, usually turned against the homeless, at the disposal of the city council for once, on the right side. But Barbara Riverwin doesn't consider this, doesn't discuss this, because she's fundamentally swimming along with the city council. And that's the problem when you make these deals with the city council. You go which way the tide flows, because it seems futile to swim against the tide. Continuing.
The stopgap measure. I think if you were to decide today to pursue this legal path, housing options would probably continue to participate in whatever way was appropriate, but I personally cannot say that I support this option. We still believe strongly that a state park program would have provided a very effective and very workable option for a segment of the homeless population. We think that the fact that the state park system is clearly communicated is determined to block this program, unfortunately, is decisive. I think that it is more important right now that we turn to an exploration of the options that are left us. In the meantime, housing options may continue. We have four recommendations that we would like to make to council right now. And I have copies of these that I want to pass to the recommend one that the council allow Housing Options to use the remainder of the funding. We have about $850 left to run the program in the parks for as long as the money lasts, probably no more than another week. And the second thing we'd like to recommend is that you state clearly, as a matter of record, that you support the concept of a well-managed, small-scale program for the homeless persons in the park, and that any vote against the continuation of this program is simply a vote not to enter into a legal battle with the state, and not because of numbers, and not because of the public outrage. Third, we would like you to seriously commit yourself to exploring the feasibility of a permanent, well-managed campground in the city, and we've submitted proposals for that campground to some of you. And finally, until such time as there is a legal alternative to either designate a set-aside area into which homeless persons can legally sleep, or commit yourself to support a moratorium on the camping ban, until such time as there's a legal place for people to sleep. Thank you for all your work. And
you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. No, this is Robert, Bathrop Spear. Robert.
Oh, hi, Robert. Hey, Robert, do you know anything about the meeting tomorrow over in San Jose for all the other free radios?
That was a week ago.
Oh, no, was it really?
Yeah, actually today there's a meeting up in San Francisco, actually in Oakland there's the free radio hearing on whether Berkeley Free Radio will be allowed to continue broadcasting in front of federal judge Claudia Wilkins. That's where many people are.
Oh, okay. All right, well, keep up the good work, Robert.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we are midway through many tapes. In case you want to interrupt the flow of the tapes, feel free to do so, because your comments are live and they're probably more important than running through these tapes, although I have designed them to be of interest to everybody. I think they cover existing issues that are important, particularly, well, the events of the last week, even though we tend to focus over much on City Council with the media straining in to focus their cameras on these politicians. Nonetheless, some issues do come out at these sessions. The number to call, however, if you want to call into this radio station and talk about the rights of poor people, is 427-3772, 427-3772. And you are tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz. Continuing with the tape of the April 9th City Council session with appropriate interpolations by yours truly. This tape was originally made to be played independently without me being in the studio, because I had planned to go to the Free Radio Berkeley hearing, which I mentioned a moment ago on the air. That's going to be a very important hearing, and I hope we'll be hearing some news soon. It should be happening even as we speak on the air. There was a rally earlier this morning up in Oakland, and I'm hoping the courtroom is packed up there as individual representatives from different stations throughout the state, indeed throughout the West Coast area, possibly throughout the entire, I guess there were some folks from Canada at the last San Jose meeting last weekend. Let's continue, however, with the City Council.
For your initial support of our program, and there are quite a few people from our campsite who would like to speak.
I have a list of people who have signed up to speak on this issue, and several items left this afternoon's agenda. And I'm pleased to invite people up and make their comments. So this is Ron Howard.
Mr. Mayor, council members.
Ron Howard is the operations manager of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which ran the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, ran the Winter Armory Shelter, and continues to run a kind of vestigial, tiny program for people to go into churches. I think it's 56 odd beds that are going to be reduced to 26, or 52 to be reduced to 26 at the end of April. Ron is a sort of a controversial figure. Some people dismiss him as the head thug at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. I found him quite reasonable and amicable guy who actually helped turn around the eviction of homeless people on November 2nd of last year, when Paul Marceau apparently gave faulty orders that everybody had to clear out of the campground for the day, remove everything they had. People would lose a lot of their stuff in so doing, even though the armory was not even open. Actually, this was the opening shot over the bow of the homeless. Well, one of many shots, but it was the shot that they returned and resisted, and when they started to organize the group Save Our Shelter, that resulted in the Coral Street Open Air Shelter staying open for an additional month and a half. They refused to move, and they insisted on a deal with Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau, which those two men then broke in mid-December with the connivance of Scott Kennedy and Michael Rotkin, as I've often repeated on this show. Here's Ron Howard at the council meeting.
Ron Howard, Operations Director for the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and I will be very brief. The numbers didn't come to the parks. If anything, they've decreased. As Operations Director and supporting housing options with transportation to and from the parks, I can, in any good faith or good conscience, continue to support this effort. As of Friday, April 12th at 5 p.m., I will terminate transportation services from my program in support of housing options. The program has been appropriately criticized as a NIMBY response.
And before we hear my exciting speech, which again has to be within a minute, these are the folks who own the property which once housed the Coral Street Open Air Shelter with room for 200 to 300 people and now has a couple of trailers behind a locked fence for 20 or 40 cash-paying SSI recipient types, meaning people who have checks rather than ordinary homeless people who have trouble even scrounging together 10 bucks to get up to the state park program that Sherry and Barbara had. Anyway, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless was providing the transportation, and this was a group that Sherry and Barbara decided not to criticize over the last few months, in spite of their vicious treatment of the homeless, breaking the promise that the homeless could stay over the winter in the Coral Street Open Air Shelter or that there'd be renegotiation if there were weather problems, excluding homeless activists and homeless people from their board of directors meetings, threatening them with arrest, refusing to allow a tape recording to be made so other people could hear what was going on inside those proceedings, lying about the issue publicly. This group, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, was the group that Sherry and Barbara decided to play patty cake with in order to get transportation up to their property, in order to get their support. Well, look how short-lived their support was. Look how short-lived that support was. And see how easily you sell out for a mess of pottage. It's a lesson for us here. And now you get to hear my speech, my very, very brief speech at City Council.
Services from my program in support of housing options.
I actually, as I said before, was not ready to give this speech. I asked Rotkin to pass me, but he said, no, you have to give it now or you can't speak, which is an example of a sort of a petty tyranny and a kind of a small-minded vindictiveness that he uses. But it's an attempt, again, to roll everybody into line with his program and his platform, and it has its intimidating effect on other people. And that's why it's so important that we resist it through every tool we have. And we point out, we appeal to other council members to break his apparent authoritarian control there.
The program has been appropriately criticized as a NIMBY response because it, of course, sends people away from the city. But in the forest of the bigger, blacker bigotry of prejudiced poison pen artists I was reading earlier and paranoid officials, I guess my reaction was not to let ourselves be stampeded into closing yet another space for homeless people. Much as I appreciate individual efforts by council members like Scott Kennedy to open up his backyard to the homeless, which I think is a commendable effort, we have no space for people to live at night. We have a camping ban that makes it illegal to sleep at night. The city has declined to either open a campground or decriminalize sleeping somewhere in the city. Until the city faces its basic responsibilities around the sleeping ban, it must keep open all existing space it can. It has that obligation. And let's do so if all the bigots in the state, from the state park down to the Soquel hairdressers, rage and shriek. Thank you.
Next
Next, Charles, can I get your last name? Charles, give me last name of the
Third council members, my name is Charles Trezise. I'm a participant at the present time in your trial campground program, and I have to commend the city for allowing this to happen. It gives me a place to stay where I don't have to worry about people waking me up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning saying you're in violation of the law and writing you a ticket that, as I understand, runs about $160 plus odd. I hope with all my heart that you will find it within your good graces to continue this program until such time as maybe perhaps you can open up city park land available for the same purpose, for people to camp, stay out of your problem at night and overnight, hopefully even through the daytime, and less problem for the city, less problems for us. Thank you very much.
So here's an interesting contrast. The homeless people are saying continue this program. Of course, they're the ones who are using it, these few homeless people who are using it. But their representatives, or let us say those who claim to speak for them, Sherry and Barbara, or specifically Barbara, I haven't talked to Sherry about this, but I think she could probably concur with Barbara, are all set to cave in, simply because they think it's no longer politically possible. And they don't want to antagonize their good friends on the city council. It's a classic example of how bureaucrats sell out the people that they are charged with representing. And it should be noted that Barbara has in her own way become a bureaucrat. She is paid, as is Sherry. They split the pay, and I think it's $9 an hour, 20 hours a week for doing this work. It's not much, but it's pay. It's pay for doing a job. I'm not saying she's getting rich doing it, but she is getting remuneration for it. And those folks in front of City Hall aren't getting paid anything, and neither am I. And neither were the homeless activists like Jane Immler, who got nothing out of what she did. She did her Calamity Jane's Cupboard for months without getting paid, actually without any money from the city at all, for the first 6 months of the free meal program back in 1989 through 1990. So I'm not saying that it's a bad idea to make a living wage, but you got to watch out, because much of the monies that the federal government, the state government, the county, and the city pour down the drain are on salaries for middle-class people rather than on the real services that homeless people need, such as a campground, folks, a replacement for the Coral Street open-air shelter that's more livable, less toxic, and open to a reasonably large number of people. Continuing with the City Council of April 9th.
Jimmy Sukas. Councilman, council people, my name is Jimmy Sukas, and I'm with the with Barbara Woman's camping program that she's got. I work, I'm a cook, and I'm homeless, and I cannot afford my any adequate housing at this time. When I heard about her program for the homeless, I took every advantage point I could on it, and found out that the program was feasible for me, and with my finances, being a taxpayer as well, just like everybody else here, I also took advantage of it. I figure that with her program, if it stays going, which I'm hoping it does, I could have my own apartment in anywhere from 30 to 45 days. Without this program, I might as well stay in jail then, because it's not going to do me a bit of good. The other thing I'd like to mention is that I understand, based on my own opinion here, that's a fast minute. Okay. All right then. There are two kinds of homeless. There's the homeless that are working, such as myself, who want to get themselves out of homelessness and set their stick at life straight. And the homeless that don't really care about themselves. And that's all I've got to say.
And here we hear a kind of a variety of the division used by the most strident critics of any support for the rights of homeless people. People like Carolyn Boozenhart, whom I kind of gave an offhanded shot at as a, she's a Soquel hairdresser who's been fighting homeless rights for years out there in Soquel, recently ran against Jan Butz in a supervisorial race last month and lost, debated me on a number of occasions around homeless rights issues. There's a distinction between the worthy poor, the deserving poor, and the homeless by choice, or the homeless who don't give a damn. Everybody deserves basic rights under the Constitution. Basic rights. And that's something that is so often forgotten in a modern society. We include Santa Cruz in that. We've seen their latest anti-homeless downtown ordinances. And it's really insidious when you see people who are homeless themselves, like this man who just spoke at city council, make this division between the working poor and then those undeserving poor. Everybody has to work in their own way to survive. You know, you might say some work at some get checks, which frankly is frequently no picnic. I don't know if any of the listeners have ever tried to deal, for example, with the welfare system here in Santa Cruz. That is a whole can of worms that I'd like to have five or six shows to talk about. But this distinction that somehow some people are worthy of basic rights, of, say, the right to sleep at night, and others are not, is ridiculous. And yet we hear it coming out of the mouths of homeless people. Actually, he's not talking about the right to sleep. He's talking about the right to have access to a campground and a program where it's relatively easier to get into the campground. I mean, actually, it could be done independently. In fact, was done independently. Homeless people kind of got together with Barbara and Sherry, the River Street refugees, and they organized their own use of campground spaces. And people can still do that and probably traditionally have done that. But it's easier when you get some kind of city support. And actually, the reason the city needs to support this program is because they allowed and colluded in the closing of the only legal place to sleep, and they support a law which makes it illegal for people to sleep at night. So they have responsibilities here. Otherwise, they're going to be paying for costly tickets. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. I was walking down the street the other day, and I saw you on TV, and I go, oh, my God, he's got his own TV program.
Yes, sir.
Well, I got an update from Oakland.
Oh, you're calling long distance?
No, actually, I just called the studio at Free Radio Berkeley, and they've been getting some updates there.
Well, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
My name is Phil Free.
No, it is not, you lying scoundrel. You're none other than Copwatch Bob Duran, the man who's been causing so much trouble to Omar of Ali Baba's Cafe.
Hey, that's his problem, Aaron.
You've been playing seditious music across the street, I understand.
Yes, like always, for the past 3 years I've been in Santa Cruz.
Singing songs like Hospitality Nazis on the
Mall. No, that's Phil's song.
You never sing that song?
With Phil I do. I don't know all the words.
Well, I've had my fill of Phil, so give us your report.
About over 150 people in front of the Oakland Federal Building. They started searching people with metal detectors. They wouldn't even let Stephen Dunifer in for some odd reason until he had to find his passport or his ID to show them, and they finally let Stephen Dunifer in. I don't know what was behind all that. But they're in the courtroom now, and they're talking about things, and probably this afternoon we'll find out more on it.
Now, is there actually a hearing? So there's no continuance in this matter?
No continuance. It's happening right now. They did not let most of the people in the courtroom. So everybody's outside rallying and having, you know, making a bunch of noise outside the courtroom right
now. Why aren't you up there, Big Bob?
Because I didn't get a ride, so.
I see. Was there, in fact, a caravan from Santa Cruz?
I believe there was somewhere. I don't know. I wasn't organizing that.
I see.
I've been busy doing lots of other things.
Well, I've got you on the line. I got a couple other questions for you.
Okay.
Unless you want to got, have you got more of your report?
No, I just had a local report. I want to let you know.
Tell me about it.
Well, there's a guy chained to UCSC sign in UCSC.
Where is this?
Down at the base of UCSC, the main entrance.
I mean, even as we speak?
As we speak, he's there.
You saw this or you heard about it?
I saw it. I got an interview with him and everything.
Whoa.
His name is Jake. I forget his last name, but he chained himself to the sign. He did this last year. This year he's doing it, and there's other people that are involved, and there's actually, I think, a coalition of people that are involved with it this time. And it all surrounds them building more prisons instead of building more schools. That's what he's focusing on. Mm-hmm. And so he chained himself to the sign to kind of show people.
Well,
what
is
he's
he
doing.
Is he accusing UC of having some complicity in this, or why is he choosing UC?
Yeah, being run by corporate interests and being run by, you know, by different rich interests and stuff like that, and affirmative action issues and stuff like that, and so he's chained on the sign right now. He's going to be there till Tuesday, and they're going to have a big rally there on Tuesday. Where I hear that even our own Mayor Mike Rodkin's going to speak out against this.
Is he going to empty the catheter that this guy has hooked up to his wee-wee, or?
Well, no, I guess he's in support of him.
What I mean is, how is this man, I guess we ask this of people sitting on the top of high flagpoles for days on end, how is he going wee-wee?
How is he going wee-wee?
Yes.
Well, he has a way of disconnecting himself and being able to go take care of business and come back.
So he's a sometime chained guy, eh?
Yeah. Well, he is chained there. He's there, but there's other supporters that are there some part of the time, and then they
minister to his basic bodily needs.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what about you down on the mall, big guy?
What about me, big guy?
Yeah, now, as I remember, I was walking down the street yesterday, and after extensive urging, you allowed me to borrow your precious tape recorder.
Uh-huh.
And interview, I guess it was the day before yesterday, the merchant and cafe man and friendly all-around town guy, I guess Alibaba, or do we call him Omar? I'm not sure.
I just known him as Alibaba.
Yeah, I think we'll call him Alibaba. And I Ali was reluctant to talk, but eventually I got a brief interview, which I understand you played on your show.
Yes, I did. Wednesday night.
Indeed. And the issue, of course, was here you were apparently last week playing your guitar across the street when you were...
Innocently.
Why don't you describe the events that happened again, because I think
it was kind of conflicting between what Alibaba said and what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing my guitar across some graphics on Friday nights like I usually do. I do the night shifts and Phil does the day shifts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there playing my music, the same songs that I've always played, and he's heard them before. He's never complained. Actually, I think he did once, and the cops asked me to move, and I did move.
Mm-hmm.
This time, though, I was reluctant to move.
Why were you reluctant?
Well, because I feel like I should be able to be there longer, and I think they should use the musicians' agreements. If they have a problem with me, they should come over and tell me, and then I said, okay, then I'll be here an hour more, and I'll be gone.
Street performers'
agreements.
Right.
That the police are supposed to acknowledge, and that the hospitality Nazis, they're the ones that actually acknowledge it. Of course, you got to actually tell them the rules of it, because they think it's an hour before you start, but it's an hour when you hear a complaint after you hear a complaint.
Right, these are the rules which Tom Noddy and Jan Luby were able to arrange, about 15 years ago when threatened with city council legal action, which sort of an informal, not a legal agreement, but an informal agreement with street performers, merchants, and people generally, that folks would add, if there was a street performer playing and somebody had an objection, whether it was another street performer who wanted that spot or a merchant, that person would approach this performer and say, hey, I'd like to, I wish you'd move after a while, and then then the guy would move after an hour. And there was no legal contract, nobody can enforce that, but that, in fact, was sort of the unspoken agreement.
Right. Yeah, well, according to the Metro, when they were talking about street musicians a week ago, it mentioned that they're widely, distributed, right, among people, like I guess what that would mean is that the host would have to walk down the street with those things, handing them to people, which they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go ask for one from the friendly host, Diane. I guess she's not there anymore.
The former supervisor,
Supervisor, and I asked her one, and it took me 3 days to get one. And I'm going to go ask for another one today, because I'm going to be using that in court when my court days does come up. I want this to go to court, quite frankly. I think it's an issue.
You were accused, in fact, the ticket that was written to you was for disturbing the peace, right?
Yes, 415.2, loud and unreasonable noise.
And this is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine,
mm-hmm.
if not a year in jail. I'm not sure which, one of the two.
Yeah.
And you have faced similar charges in the past, but not, Stuart Martin of the ID building once accused you of singing nasty songs about shoplifting in the bookshop Santa Cruz or some such thing?
Yeah, which I do think about that.
Mm-hmm. And you were then picked up like a week later on a Disturbing the Peace ticket.
Two counts of Disturbing the Peace.
Hauled off to jail, but the charges disappeared before you reached court, right?
Yeah, well, I went to my arraignment, and then I went to the pretrial, and then John, or what's his name, Keith Lyons, who named our Moral Compass album,
Keith Lyons is an assistant district attorney who, in the trial of Kim Argula, at which you were a witness, said that you had lost your moral compass or something.
Yeah, because I shoplifted some food to eat.
Yes. This was
and
in
they
some
have
time
to
ago.
Go over. They have to mull that over before I become a witness on the court on the thing. So anyway, he was there and he stood up and said, "I want to dismiss this on the lack of evidence."
Mm-hmm.
And so what they would have had to fight me on was 415.3, which is the words that I used.
The fighting words.
Fighting words is what they call it, but nobody was fighting, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a words that would provoke someone to violence.
This was an older ticket we're talking about now that happened down near the bookshop Santa Cruz.
Yeah, that was about 2 years ago.
Now, wasn't there another ticket that you got on the corner of Woolworths for disturbing the peace?
Yeah, Sergeant Henning.
A sergeant, you mean Hobo Hunter Henning?
Hobo Hunter Henning, yeah.
And when did you get that ticket?
That's December 2nd on my birthday.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I got a ticket then, and then that one didn't even get filed by the DA. I went down to the DA's office, followed that one forever.
And that was for unreasonable noise or for nasty lyrics?
That was loud and unreasonable noise.
I see. So the same charge you're now facing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one was interesting because this is the one I'm making a complaint against Sergeant Henning about, which actually Sergeant, what the hell is his name? The guy that comes to CPRB meetings.
Sergeant Varner.
Varner. He called me up the other day, and I'm going to go talk to him on Tuesday.
Oh, good.
About Sergeant Henning.
Make sure you make a tape of the entire proceeding.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Can I do that?
Of course.
Okay, good. Because I know they do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, anyway, that one I got from singing out front of Woolworths. Evidently, the guy at the hot dog cart there is the one who charged me. The owner of the hot dog cart. And,
I thought that there was some off-duty police officer who was concerned about the lyrics, and he's not the owner of the hot dog cart.
No, but he decided to come over there and start yelling at me. His name was Hank Schombeck. That's on the tape. I taped that one, too. And he went off telling me that he should go into Woolworths and get some soap and wash my mouth out, and I was a bad person.
We're referring to another ticket for your playing the guitar downtown on the Pacific Avenue's former Garden Mall and in front of Woolworths. And this is an earlier ticket you got. Again, the charge was the misdemeanor charge of disturbing the peace, and this ticket disappeared in court.
Yes.
It was never filed.
Never filed. The DA never filed on. I think the DA gets these cases and just laughs at them sometimes. But they're going to get one they could lock on to.
But the most recent case, and the one that we're talking about, happened last Friday, when for the first time, on the spot, you were actually taken to jail in handcuffs, correct?
No, it's not the first time. I've been taken...
Well, it's the first time you were actually taken to jail on a disturbing the peace ticket when it happened, right?
Yeah.
I understand that, I guess, on this earlier ticket with Stuart Martin, they arrested you several days later, or actually was it a week and a half later, after you'd inquired at the DA's office whether there were any charges pending, and they said they would certainly notify you, and the notification came in the form of a pair of handcuffs and a couple of cops in a squad car, right?
Yeah, Sergeant Seeley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this time they actually...
There was another time when I was arrested, I was singing Cop Killer, Ice-T's beloved song.
Oh, when was this?
Oh, this was about a year ago, last summer maybe.
And who made the complaint then?
No one complained. This is what was funny. There was four cops that were all like what do you call it when football players get together, huddling together.
They were looking for something to. Oh, they were the ones who were complaining, eh?
Yeah, and then they found out I had a camping warrant, and I think a DUI warrant way back. And so
they found an old warrant that had nothing to do with disturbing the peace and took you off to jail, but the motivation was your song Cop Killer in your
head.
Yes,
opinion. It was.
And then did you actually tape record any comments the police made at that time?
I didn't have a tape recorder back then. We didn't have a radio back then, but yeah.
Times have changed. You're never without your tape recorder, Bob.
Yeah, I always have it. I actually, which was interesting about this case, I got arrested and taken to jail. Officer Black arrested me, and Officer Perry arrested me. And I told them that tape recorder is my evidence, and that stays with me. And I don't know what legal ramification that has. I should look up what evidence is. But as far as I'm concerned, it's my evidence, and he allowed it to stay in my pocket, which took when I went to jail and they take your property, all your, you know, take mm-hmm. your clothes off and all that stuff, shoes, and not all your clothes, but my tape recorder stayed with me in my little box when I went to jail, in the county jail, when I booked in the county jail, and it got to go with me when I left. And so I thought that was interesting. He didn't take it for evidence.
Watch your step on that, because I tape recorded incidents while I was police in another jurisdiction, and my tape completely disappeared. And it wasn't,
really?
Yeah, so you've got the best thing to do if you are recording something is to take the tape out and hand it to a friend that's nearby.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it may not make it to the evidence lockup, or there may be a small accident en route or something like that.
A car may run over it.
Who knows? You know, or might get accidentally erased. That could happen,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway, this incident last Friday has now laid you open to a court date, and you're going to be showing up to be arraigned on this charge of disturbing the peace for singing what song?
What song was it? Oh, I was singing the song they grabbed me. I was singing Drug War Casualty. Hmm. Song about the drug war and people being stuffed in prisons for drugs.
Did you use the word fuck in this song?
No. Uh-uh.
Well, that
the other song I did, though.
What was the other song?
Down So Long, talking about Mumia and talking about people being down. Actually talks about me being arrested for disturbing the peace.
I see.
It's an old Doors rendition, you know. Mm-hmm. Been down so goddamn long, down so fucking long, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the one that busted the camel's back.
I see. Yeah. So you're not making an anti-Persian reference here, I assume.
Oh, no, not at all.
Because you, in fact, have an association with a woman of Persian heritage.
Is that what she is?
Well, that's what I'm...
My kid's part Persian, too.
Now, I want to point out to you that I went and spoke to your complainant over at Alibaba's Cafe.
Yes.
And as you may know, by hearing the tape that I made and playing it on your show, he wants, I don't know if he mentioned it on tape, but he told me, and as I told you, he wants mediation in the sense that he wants to talk to you. Not mediation, just he's willing to talk to you directly about this.
Well, why didn't he do that before? Why didn't he come up to me and talk to me?
Oh, I'm not justifying what he did or trying to fathom his motives. All I'm doing is passing on the message that if you want to talk to him, he is willing to talk to you. And this, for example, is something he was not willing to do with musician Phil Free when Phil was playing near Alibaba's Cafe in front of the host center when we'd set up our Hound Dog the Host's table about a year ago, mm-hmm. and he filed a complaint against Phil Free for essentially disturbing the peace. Mm-hmm. So if you want, and I'm wondering, are you prepared to go talk to this man and see what his concerns are? Try to lower the level of paranoia?
Well, according to the interview that you took, I was listening to it, I played it on the air the other night. In the interview, he said he came up and talked to me. He said he came over and asked me to keep it down, which he did not. He just went directly to the police.
Actually, he told me several things. I don't remember hearing that, but I imagine you listened to it again. I only heard the interview once when
yeah.
it was actually made. But he did say off tape several times that he doesn't deal with you or other musicians. He simply sends the police over to talk about it because he feels... it's not clear whether he feels threatened or he doesn't have any respect for you. I don't think he would put it that way because he spoke of you as though he did have respect for you.
I think it's his approach because he's approached other people in a kind of authoritarian manner, and of course the other person would be kind of upset to that fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he came up and said, hey, you know, would you mind moving like in a little while, you know? I mean, if it's cool with you, you know? I mean, if people came up to me and said something like that, like there was a woman I was singing next to Logos, at one time, this old woman came across and said, you know, you're really bothering me. I'm trying to get some sleep, and I can't sleep. And I was wondering if you can move along and if you could not play here. And I said, sure, not only will I not play there, I won't play there. You know, I won't play there. I won't play there because I know I'm loud, and I don't want to keep you awake.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't play there along this fence unless it's way close in your Cathcart area.
Well, maybe you'd be willing to go and tell Ali this. Tell Omar this.
Well, actually,
I'm having trouble remembering if it's Ali or Omar.
Yeah.
My apologies to him if he's listening.
I think he kind of blew it when he didn't like try to come and talk to me in the first place.
Well, it sounds like he has a practice of not talking to anybody, and you might be able to actually alter his practice by going up to him and saying to him what you said to me, which is, look, you know, we may be fighting this ticket in court, and I disagree with what you did, but I want you to know that had you come up to me in a direct manner and spoken to me from one person to another, that the result might have been very different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tell him this directly, who knows? It might have a positive impact. I can't say. Maybe not, you know. And I realize that, you know, you're a complainant in a court case, but, I mean, he's a complainant in a court case against you. But, you know, I think that that's in line with the spirit of what we want done downtown, which is having people talk to people when they have problems. I mean, if he isn't willing to talk to you, and but he said he is, then he said he is willing to hear you. And I think that it might be worth your while just to go up to him and see what happens when you talk to him.
Okay. Well, I got to go.
I want to let you know also that we're going to be calling Tom Noddy, the famous street performer's grandfather of all these concerns, in case you want to tune in and make some further comments.
Okay. Do you got, before you leave, maybe you could check on Free Radio Berkeley. I got their number here if you want to.
I can do that. Give me their number. Do you want me to use the, I thought we had no long distance out of here.
No, we do.
Okay.
Area code 510.
Mm-hmm.
464, oh, excuse me, wait, that's the other number. That's 510-655,
mm-hmm,
7146.
Okay.
And then they'll probably update you. Probably about your time your show's, you know, ending. They should have a decision by then, I would think.
Well, I will call them up and pass on the word to the general listening audience.
Okay.
Because okay.
They're getting updates all the time from the folks there at Berkeley.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, keep your powder dry. And when is your court date?
April 26th.
And you also have another court date coming up for the
camping.
Criminal sleeping, that is.
Actually, they haven't decided if that's criminal. That's kind of funny thing because I went around, you know, I went to court, and on the calendar it says criminal, or it's not criminal, but it says it's a misdemeanor. And then I get to court, and Barton says it isn't, it's just an infraction. But it is twice within 48 hours. I said, well, then it's a misdemeanor. He's all, well, I don't know. So Judge Barton didn't know if I'm a misdemeanor or not misdemeanor.
Did he give you a trial date or a pretrial?
He wrote down infraction. Yeah, I don't remember the trial date. I have to dig it out.
Well, yeah, generally speaking, there's actually some controversy around this because now they are apparently charging people with misdemeanor sleeping. They've never
right.
done this before.
Well, I went down with Dan to the city attorney's office and informed the city attorney. I asked him, well, what is it? He says, well, I don't know. I haven't even read the police report. And I said, well, it was just arraigned today, and you haven't read the police report, and I've been arraigned, and your city's the one that's charging me. And he doesn't know anything about it. And
yeah, I have less and less respect for Tony Condotti on these
yeah.
issues, I'm afraid. He seems like an amiable little guy, but...
It's kind of funny when I told him, oh, by the way, you're going to have about 100 of these cases coming through your office. And he's like, I know. So I think that's why he said to Robert Flory the other day that they're going to go for the misdemeanor because he doesn't want to have to deal with it.
Well, he will. I think he will deal with it because...
Really?
Well, no, that's a good question. I think you're right. I think misdemeanors get dealt with by the district attorney.
By the county, yeah.
But the city attorney has to request they be prosecuted under the city law. It's a rather complicated process. I'm going to talk more about this issue off the air. I mean, when you're off the phone.
Okay.
And so feel free to listen in.
Okay.
All right.
Bye, Robert.
Thanks, Bob.
And that was Skidmark's Bob Duran of the band Just Kidding, whose music has gotten him into trouble on a number of occasions, or I should say intolerance for his music has gotten him into trouble on a number of occasions. He was arrested last Friday, a week ago, for playing songs that were regarded as unreasonable noise by the vendor across the street at Alibaba's Cafe, whom I briefly interviewed, but don't have that interview with me here today. You may have heard that interview if you listened to Bob's show on Wednesday, which I believe is on... I don't even have my flyer with me, but I think it's in the evening. In any case, a couple things about this whole issue of the sleeping ban, misdemeanors, and so forth. Infractions, as you who know have been following the show, are a sort of a lower... more trivial kind of offense, which charged like some kind of traffic violation, which you can pay a fine directly without even going to court, or if you go to court, your trial, if you get one, is only before a judge with no public attorney or public defender provided. Misdemeanors, on the other hand, are more serious offenses, which you can be punished with larger fines, $500, 6 months in jail as a maximum. Can't be sent to state prison, but you will be spending time in the county jail if the judge decides to go give that to you or throw that at you. And in these cases, you do get jury trials, and you do get access to an appointed public defender, which in some cases is worse than it might be. Generally worse in our county because it's generally worse all over. The public defenders are part of a process of running you through, warehousing you through. They will try to plea bargain, they will spend small amounts of time with you, and they have virtually no patience usually with political cases, which of course the sleep out cases are. The sleep out cases, of course, are the cases of people challenging the city's anti-homeless sleep deprivation ordinance 6.36.010, which actually 6.36, and there are a number of sections, but 010 is the section usually charged, in which if you sleep after 11 o'clock at night, if you cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night, or if you maintain a campsite with intention to stay overnight any time during the day, and this is being improperly interpreted by Sergeant Andy Crane, for instance, to mean if you have a blanket during the day or sleep during the day, you can be forced to pay a $168 fine, and you're guilty of an infraction, you know, if you are found guilty by the judge in a court trial, again, a trial only before a judge. However, there is a second section of the law, 6.36.050, also a city code, also easily changeable by the city and the city council, should they want to do so, and our great liberals don't at the moment. That provision means that if you sleep, it states that if you sleep twice within 48 hours, that's a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. You do get a jury trial on that, and you will get access to a public defender. Now, the significance to this is you can have a real trial before 12 people. The upside is it's possible that one of those people, or more, will refuse to convict, and they have to find beyond a reasonable doubt that you are guilty, all 12. Alternatively, they also have to find beyond a reasonable doubt that you are innocent if you are to be released from the whole process. But usually what happens is if a jury hangs, which means if they can't get a unanimous verdict, the DA makes a decision as to whether to prosecute that case again. Since a jury trial costs about $10,000 at a minimum, it's a kind of an expensive process to use. Now, these would probably be short jury trials because we're not talking about lots of witnesses, so maybe it would be less. But still, it's an expensive business, and the county has never, ever prosecuted a sleeping misdemeanor. People have been arrested and charged, let's put it this way, cited for sleeping misdemeanors by the police department. They've been jailed over the weekend, as Sean Alimi was, as Robert Flory has been jailed, as others have been jailed as well. But usually they're released, and when they get to court, no charges have appeared on the docket. Now, this week, that all changed. This week, Robert Flory was informed, as you heard from Bob Duran, by the city attorney that the city attorney would begin pressing the DA to charge misdemeanors on these cases. The significance of a charging a misdemeanor means that when you get to court, even though you've been arrested for it, you've served time in jail for it over the weekend, usually when you get to court in the past, invariably, the charge disappears or is reduced to an infraction charge. That is a smaller charge. If it is not reduced, if it actually is fully charged as 6.36.050, a misdemeanor, sleeping twice within 48 hours in the city of Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night, actually it's violating the ordinance twice, so you could be sleeping during the daytime if they successfully convicted you of, quote, maintaining a campsite, as Andy Crane likes to put it. I guess a blanket for him is a campsite. He doesn't require much. If you are convicted of that, that's a misdemeanor. Now, what that means is, if you are charged with a misdemeanor, you then have the right to a jury trial and a public defender. Additionally, they only have one chance to try you, in the sense that I believe they can't reduce the charges without your permission. So if they want to say, wait a minute, we don't like this idea, let's just drop it down to a minor charge and put you before a judge without a public defender, you can say, no, I do not allow that. I demand a full jury trial. And indeed, unless you are unconstitutionally treated, as some have been, as for instance in the court of Heather Morse, a judge in Watsonville, Robert Flory went before that judge back in 1992, which is a whole another chapter here. But generally, you can insist that the misdemeanor be carried on. The only thing that they can do then is to dismiss the misdemeanor. And I believe that they can then refile once. They could refile it again, but not more than once. And I believe felonies can't be refiled Again, I'm a little bit unclear on this. If we have any legal eagle experts out there who know more specifically, feel free to call in. In any case, the question has now arisen because not only was Flory told that misdemeanor sleeping charges will be filed, that is to say, will now be a penalty of up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine to fall asleep twice in 48 hours in Santa Cruz, but actual misdemeanor charges were filed against two people, Nikki from San Francisco and Mooncat, a local sleeping ban activist who's fighting for basic rights for the poor by sleeping outside at City Hall each night. And now they're in their 43rd night at that City Hall sleepout, which, by the way, you can support because the payphone is back in again. Yes, folks, you can call them at 425-9679. 425-9679. That is the number to call those City Hall sleepyheads. So just let it ring about 10 or 15 times, and you'll be able to get through to the City Hall sleepers. For some reason, the phone is back. We're glad about it. Apparently, they were telling the truth. It wasn't simply removed to make it difficult for the demonstrators, or if it was, it's back in any case. In any case, this misdemeanor situation means now that these two individuals, Nikki and Mooncat, have to face the possibility of real jail time for their crime of sleeping twice. And that also means they're entitled to a full jury trial. Now, this may be a bluff by the authorities, and the reason it may be a bluff is this, that the people who've been harassed by the police and arrested on these misdemeanor charges in the last month have claimed the police are acting illegitimately because the misdemeanor charges are disappearing when they reach the courts. So how can the police fairly arrest you on a misdemeanor if a misdemeanor has never been charged and there has never been a trial held on those cases, and if the DA has a policy of not doing that? So maybe the DA's office is colluding with the city police to say, hey, we'll let you continue to harass these people by arresting them on misdemeanor charges, and we'll take the case to the very edge of trial, and then we'll drop it. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that they really do think they can convict someone on a sleeping ban misdemeanor case, and once they've convicted them, they will essentially either put them away in jail or give them a probation requirement to stay away from the demonstration. It's a pretty determined band of demonstrators there. Dan Hopkins, Sean Alimi, Mooncat, Bull, Jimmy Riley, Al, folks who've been there for 43 days now, and they don't look like they're going away. Although there's been some questioning, I've questioned on this show the effectiveness of the protests, so out of sight, so out of the way. Nonetheless, they're determined to do it. And in fact, we're going to have a little report later in the show. Not too much later, because our show is scheduled to end in 20 minutes unless we get an extension. So we'll be able to give you kind of the most recent. I think they got 5 tickets last night. Betting was stolen, and they were infraction tickets. No one was jailed. But in any case, these misdemeanor charges are a new development and really warrant our support. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, David Dumars, or BD as he calls himself, really wanted to get your support against the harassment he was suffering for multiple charges he got after being pepper sprayed by police twice in 2 days as part of an essential police repression effort to smash the homeless peace vigil, which was then down on Pacific Avenue and was kind of done by Robert Flory and Dave Jacobs, Valentine's Day of 1994. David Dumars wanted your support because he was facing misdemeanor sentencing. Well, we have misdemeanor trials, apparently, coming up for these two individuals, and they need support. And indeed, it may be one way to mobilize around these folks. And Kate Wells, our friendly Catnip Kate, as I call her, who's losing all her property, losing her house, we may actually give her a call to see what she has to say about these misdemeanor charges. In fact, why don't we do that right now? The reason I mention her is she may be taking a case on, and I'd like to get the word from her. So let's give Kate a call and see exactly what's going on, maybe that we haven't heard about. Kate has been helpful in getting in touch with people in jail, but she's very, very strapped as to her resources.
Law office.
Is this Catnip Kate Wells?
This is the very famous same one.
Hey, Catnip Kate, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, my God.
Say hello to the audience.
Hello, audience.
Now, Kate, we've heard from Mooncat and Nikki, or actually through Robert Flory and others, that these individuals have actually been charged with misdemeanor sleeping under the city's 6.36.050 go to sleep twice in 48 hours. Face a 6-month in jail, $1,000 fine penalty.
I've heard the same vicious rumor.
And have you contacted the city attorney to confirm any of this?
I have not.
I see. Well, you've been involved in some negotiations around this issue, including the issue of blanket seizures. I mean, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I have, in fact, spoken to the city attorney about it, and he said that basically the same thing that the cops are saying. They're doing it because they have the right to. And I said, well, doesn't that seem a little outrageous to you? And he says, well, why don't you go ahead and just change the law? Like
law
it's something real simple to do, huh?
Are you talking about the sleeping ban law?
Uh-huh.
Well, what about the business of seizing people's blankets? And what provision of the law or penal code is he citing as justification for that?
Well, he's citing as justification the part of the camping ban that says that any of the things that you set up in preparation for a campground can be are illegal, since it's illegal to camp, and therefore they can be taken as evidence. And of course, the kinder and gentler thing to do would be to photograph them, which I understand they are anyway. But it's clear it's just further harassment. That's all. Were the people able to take advantage of some national media this morning? You know.
Oh, you mean at the funeral of Adam Darling?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I think they were talking about it, but there was a mixed feeling as to whether a funeral was an appropriate place to raise the issue of the sleeping ban. I thought it was an appropriate place.
How about Adam Darling is able to rest in peace? Why aren't we?
Exactly.
Also,
you have national media with Hillary Clinton around.
Exactly.
I think it's really appropriate to try to embarrass the city council around this issue. And frankly, Daryl Darling is one of the most culpable people around on the whole issue of the closing of the campground.
Right.
So he cannot evade responsibility by being in the midst of his own personal tragedy, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
You know, that certainly anybody's heart goes out to anybody who has a personal tragedy.
Of course.
You know, even including the most despicable character you can name.
Right.
But the reality of everybody's personal problems, I should say everybody, the personal suffering that is going on nightly, actually it's a public policy that's producing suffering every night in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
Even though Darling and, I guess, Paul Merceau of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I suppose that personally they would claim they oppose the sleeping ban, yet he presides over a locked-out field, which they could have opened up at any time,
mm-hmm.
and could open up...